The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Rootedness to earth ties back to the people who first settled the lands that we now occupy. Robin Wall Kimmer, professor of botany, member of Potawatomi Nation, and author, writes in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, quote, "In some native languages, the term for plants translates to those who take care of us." This, she writes, is really why I made my daughters learn to garden, so they would always have a mother to love them long after I am gone. Rootedness to the earth ties back to the people who first settled the lands that those of us who are non-native now occupy. Rootedness to the earth ties back to the pagan traditions of Europe. It does so in ways that infuse our pagan community today and inform their practices, ways that Christine only had a brief moment to scratch the surface of this morning, but you can all avail yourselves of opportunities to participate in. It does so in ways that permeate traditions not labeled pagan, like the evergreens that many of us bring into our homes and hang on our doors in December. That's an ancient pagan ritual of the Northern Hemisphere in Europe, that when in the dead of winter, when there was no sign of green, of life, all of it forced underground into hibernation, a reminder of the green that would return in spring. And as I'm sure many of you know, Easter is named for the spring goddess of Germanic paganism, a goddess of dawn and fertility, and celebrated at the spring equinox, Oestra, or Eostrae is actually how it's pronounced in Old Germanic. But so we borrow all the time our Easter, of course, last week, just the day before spring equinox. In a recent trip to Mexico City, our guide pointed out some stones taken from old Aztec temples that, when they were torn down, were used to build the Christian churches that replaced them. But like such a metaphor, all these earth-centered traditions, both alive and present, and in the ways like the stones of those temples and evergreen trees too, woven into what was created from them, right under our noses. Our ties to earth are ancient and cultural. They are biological too. We not only come from earth, are fed and nourished, given air and watered by earth, our immune system strengthened by the sun activating the production of vitamin D, triggering melatonin. All the ways that we are made and nourished and shaped by earth, it's in our DNA. Years ago, too, I talked in a sermon about biophilia, field of study some of you may be familiar with. A field of study that says, in other ways, we are literally wired in connection to earth, to want, need, love, be better and more whole in the presence of nature. Psychologist Eric Fromm coined the term to describe our human psychological draw to all life and all things alive. And E.O. Wilson, the biologist, entomologist, taxidermist professor at Harvard University, wrote a book under that title in 1984. We are drawn to life, it said. And if there was a draw to life, greater emotional health in the presence of nature, as others since have argued, the opposite has also been noted. In 2008, in an interview with Nova's Peter Tyson, E.O. Wilson, revisiting his theory of biophilia on the 25th anniversary of the book's publication, said, quote, "There's now a lot of concern, even consternation, among not just naturalists and poets and outdoor professionals, but spreading through, I think, the better part of the educated public, that we've cut ourselves off from something vital to full human psychological and emotional development." Richard Louvre, author of Last Child in the Woods, posited that children today suffer from what he calls nature deficit disorder. Anxiety, depression, obesity, all he and others think tied to a life of too much indoors, too much concrete and mediated by technology. Did you know that in studies of people in nursing homes, ones who were asked to just enjoy a plant that was watered and cared for by staff died sooner than people who were asked simply to look after and water the plant that was put in their room? It turns out plants aren't just the things we take care of, but they take care of us, as Kimmerer says. And life isn't just what we're drawn to and what heals us, but what heals and sustains us to care for it. Reciprocity with nature, in other words, is in our bones and psyche. The land knows you, Kimmerer writes, even when you are lost. Even a wounded world is feeding us, she writes elsewhere. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. Reading about earlier cultures, Native American traditions, and even Aztecs with their monistic pantheism. Has anyone ever heard that term before? We've got one person who's monistic pantheism. Well, for those who are interested, it's a belief that all life is one force, and that force shows up present in all nature. All these cultures were so deeply tied to nature and to an animated sense of the sacredness and power and relationship that nature had to us. A bit like the story that Laura shared this morning of the Roots children. It seems that in earlier times, the idea that nature was animated, that it had personality and presence and power, was so much more the norm. And nature is animated by personality and presence and power, isn't it? What you call that presence and power and personality is up to you, but it's there. We are constantly discovering more and more about that personality, presence, and power. The amazing discoveries that are unfolding about the wild world of mycelia. Perhaps the largest creature in the world, if we decide to call that interconnected web a single creature, the entity underground without a brain that does things like borrows nitrogen from one plant or tree that has too much and transports it to another that needs the nitrogen. Though it feeds itself on dead wood, so it's unclear how self-serving that act of care for a tree is, right? Or the world of lichen. I know, this is an exciting church Sunday for all of you. That over a century ago was blown wide open. It blew wide open, I should say, the notions that were prevalent in evolution that said that branches of life would evolve away from each other in differentiation. that our ideal in some ways then was to grow apart. And here was this entity that actually, it was discovered, was two entities, algae and lichen fungus, in this intimate interconnection. Merlin Sheldrake, in his book Entangled Life, writes, "Lichens quickly grew into a biological principle, a type of inter-kingdom collaboration." You'll never look at the forest the same again. In their relationship, both partners were able to make a life in places where neither could survive alone. We not only need nature, seem wired to be better in its presence. When caring for it, find it actually cares for us, but you and I need to allow ourselves to look and listen to the animation of presence and power and personality that's there and reawaken to it, even more always than we already are. It's gorgeous, it's fascinating. It awakens us, among other things, to wonder and curiosity, which are two feelings and movements of the mind and spirit that actually contribute to our happiness and well-being. For instance, I'm pretty sure I remember reading that psychologists said that it is almost impossible to feel fear and anxiety at the same time that you feel wonder and curiosity. So if you're doing one, you can't do the other. Awakening to all of this, as our ancestors were more awake to it, and some still are among us to show us the way, it's to come more fully alive to ourselves, right? And it's maybe the way to give the world a chance to come more fully alive too. Just as we are moved to protect loved ones and friends with their presence and power and personality that we are in wonder and adoration of and delight in, so too will we save nature when we work our way back increasingly from this industrial modern dualism that increasingly invited us, forced us, encouraged us to see nature as a resource that was to be used and to focus our eyes back to a different way of seeing one another. Those who do, when we do, by choice, by discipline or accident, know when we do so in the moment even that it changes us, right? Robin Wall Kimmerer writes, "I choose joy over despair, not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily, and I must return the gift." What does this mean practically? How do we start to do this? You can read Entangled Life, so you hear more about the wild world of fungi, if you haven't already. How many people have read Entangled Life? Oh, yeah, I mean, there's two of you who could lead the book group. We are so blessed to live in a part of the world where you can walk or hike in beauty in every direction. My husband and I note the flowering trees and bushes on our walk to BART, and recently we took a bet as we entered Drury Commons, which is this little one-block park that's built over former train tracks, a little mini park. Took a bet on how many different blooms would be there, and it was over 25. I lost the bet. But it was over-under, which I never think is really fair as a betting strategy. Do you ever walk and smell the night-blooming jasmine? I mean, this plant that's just dumping this perfumed air profligately into the night. It's such a metaphor for how we might be invited to live. These are some of the ways I'm trying to retrain myself to see and be awake to nature. Take a moment when you get your coffee today to go out into the courtyard, as cold as it is, and see and sit near the wisteria that's out there that's still blooming, which has this beautiful scent if you get close enough. Notice the gardens around the church. See the one over by the Star King sarcophagus and statue? It was redone in the last couple years with all native species. Thank you, Merrick Munn, for overseeing that, and thank you, Paul, for pointing it out. So if you want to help maintain the gardens, let us know, too, as your spiritual practice. I know many of you have gardening as one of your spiritual practices. Dorkily, I started paying attention to my succulents, which I got because they're almost impossible to kill. And it's been fun to pay more attention to them. And I've even started taking care of these old orchids that I can't bear to throw away, that they haven't bloomed for years, and talking to them. And recently, both bloomed. Kimmerer has all kinds of suggestions around the responsible harvest. One of them is, use respectfully what you take, never waste what you've taken. Share. That's awakening to relationship too. Farmers markets. We now have glasses, thanks to Deborah Baldwin and the Environmental Working Group. Some glasses that you can use for your coffee at social hour. And if you have an event, of course, use real dishes. We're constantly looking at how to reduce our carbon footprint here. We just installed a heat pump in the offices to try it and see if it works so we can swap out the old boiler. There's so many ways to keep being in this relationship and to awaken ourselves to the responsibilities. You know more than I do. But one last way I wanted to mention is poetry. It's one of the ways I think that I love to be in relationship to this reanimation process. Good poetry, I feel like, is one of the best vessels for seeing and capturing and communicating nature's personality, other than being in nature's presence. And so I thought I'd end this morning with a poem in this Sunday. That's the last Sunday of Poetry Month, too. It's a poem by my friend and colleague, Manish Mishra Marzetti. It's in a new book that he and another colleague, Nancy McDonald Ladd, wrote entitled Seeds of a New Way. And it's about the urge to life that's in everything in us, in this world, powerful and gorgeous and vital and worthy of our respect and love and stewardship. It's called Desert Flowers. Improbably, the wind-blown seed found its way here to a long, beautiful stretch of land, but one that was hot, dry, and arid. A spark of life resting in an unprepared desert. Quenching, life-giving sustenance, the rain comes and goes, even if infrequently, sometimes only a few drops at a time, and the seed begins to take root, possibility brought alive. But what life is this amidst the harshness? Pocket mice, rattlesnakes, camel spiders, danger and inhospitality lurking everywhere. One chance encounter gone wrong could bring death to the seedling. And yet, somehow, the intrinsic invitation to thrive, to flourish and grow, finds a way, even when it's a struggle. Poking gently up from the cracked, parched desert earth, a beautiful pink, five-petaled phacelia blooms spectacularly, improbably. We are those wind-blown seeds. The universe is longing for life, for thriving, for beauty. Even when it is against the odds. We are all part of this universe's longing for life and beauty against the odds. but we human beings can reduce the odds. Or improve them, is that the right way to say it? And as Kimmerer writes, to love a place is not enough. We must find a way to heal it. The beauty of this particular work you and I are called to, Kimmerer also reminds us, is that as we work to heal the earth, it heals us. We were meant to be alive to wonder, to relationship, connection, the magic of this world. This is what makes us happiest, not all the rest. So may we be blessed in the work of paying attention, of serving and reanimating our aliveness to the presence and power and personality of all life. May we be blessed to find and do what we can to serve, protect, and go easy on our siblings of plants, animals, fungus, water, soil, air. And may we be healed and reanimated ourselves by a life that is right-sized back into the relationship we were made for. Amen.
Every day is Earth Day for me. Paganism is a religion of Earth, a religion of worshiping and working with the divine physical manifestation of the world. And I am a pagan. In my personal spiritual practice, and once a month in community, as part of the pagan interest circle, I participate in or perform ritual. Pagan ritual begins with grounding, an exercise where one sends one's energy down into the earth, then draws up nurturing, healing earth energy into one's own body. The basic form of ritual, drawing a protective circle, calling in the four directions and the corresponding elements of physical life, earth, air, fire, and water, and invoking the divine, energetically creates sacred space. Sacred space is a place between the worlds, a magical space. And what happens there in ritual between the worlds affects all the worlds. Our world is Earth. I'm drawn to the element of Earth. I'm the one most likely to call in North and Earth or to set up the North Earth altar. I have a personal relationship with Earth. You do too. Earth, Earth planet, Earth element, Earth home, Earth deity, Earth ground of our being, Earth soil, mineral, rock. Dry, solid, rough, porous, moist, dark, heavy, malleable, hard, body, bones, dust, compost, life, death, dynamic, conscious, earth. Earth is the interdependent web of life, and earth is sacred. In the pagan traditions, the goddess has many names. We call Earth Mother, the goddess Gaia. I view myself as a cell in the body of this planet Earth, just as biological cells make up my own human body. So naturally, it follows that I love and want to care for the Earth, my home, my goddess, my ground of being. Protecting Mother Earth is protecting my own survival. As such, decades ago, I began conserving water and recycling paper and plastics long before it was popular or became a San Francisco initiative to do so. I'm conscious of my ecological footprint and try to minimize my negative impact whenever I can. I haven't owned a car in decades and use public transportation. I check the labels of products I buy for harmful chemicals and buy organic food. I really try to walk the talk. I don't need to tell you the story of how we have arrived at the environmental crises we are now experiencing. I don't need to reiterate the current government regime's alarming actions to eliminate all environmental protections, including developments like this week's announced plans to sell off mine our national parks. It won't surprise you that, as a Unitarian Universalist pagan, I'm also an environmental activist. I'm currently focused on responding to the Trump administration's repeal of the Clean Water Act, which protected 60% of our nation's streams and millions of acres of wetlands. This just happened, April 1st, no fool, this month. 55 years ago, on April 22nd, 1970, the first Earth Day focused national attention and political actions for environmental protections. Now, every day needs to be Earth Day. Why? Because I have a personal connection, relationship with Earth. You do too.